Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Tim Burrows. Joining me as usual at the studios of CBS Interactive, Scott Rohde of PR agency House Party.
Hey, Tim.
And our guest today, Jyoti Hughes from Now Communications.
Good morning.
This week, Fairfax's make-believe iPad app, MasterChef ends on a high note, Nine's Big Hope Hot in Cleveland makes its debut, The Chaser, Julie Bishop stare off, The Gruen Nation gets election fever. New ads. How many hipsters can you fit in one Honda Jazz? And if you thought your holiday was bad, check this out. Plus, why I'm planning to quit Foursquare. So first we turn to Jyoti Hughes. Now, whenever we write about you, you always end up attracting a comment stream. That's fair to say. So, for those who aren't familiar with your business, you're a PR, which I'm saying just to drag in the pedants, and more specifically a publicist, which is sure. an area of PR. So it's probably worth just maybe explaining the business offering that's getting a few people riled in the last few days.
Well, Tim, it's not about what you do; it's why you do it. And I believe this is what customers want. Clients want a pay and result PR company. They're sick of paying $3,000, $5,000, $7,000 retainers per month and not getting the coverage they want.
So you're saying to them, you'll get them 2 minutes on Today Tonight or don't pay you.
Correct. But basically they're coming to me and saying, we want to be on Today Tonight. We want to be Sydney Morning Herald. And that's where we want to be.
But shouldn't, as a PR man, you actually be the person that actually says to them, well, you know, that might not be the place that you should be? Shouldn't you? I mean, that's what public relations people do. We give consultation, we give communication advice. If a client came to me and said, this is where I have to be, I have to be in current affair, I have to be there, you know, you'd have to take a step back and say, well, does that fit with your overall strategy? Does that fit with where your company's going? You know, to say that if a client came to me and said, this is where I have to be, I'd have to stop them and say, why?
Well, that's not what happens. I go and see them and we sit down together and we work out what they want. And it's all very transparent. And if they want to be on Today Tonight, and I see it's viable, I say, let's go for it. If they can't get on Today Tonight or a current affair, I say, guys, this won't work. But how about Sydney Morning Herald? How about something else?
Are there times where for a client, the best PR strategy is about not getting that media exposure, for instance?
No. Everyone I talk to at the moment wants coverage to increase sales. I mean, I have a company called Pump Shop who sells pumps to farmers. They don't want to be on television or Sydney Morning Herald, they want to be in the land. So I work with them. Someone else wants to be on TV to increase sales. So
now, that must be interesting, actually, because, of course, you know, something like Today Tonight, you've got, I guess it's one of your regular outlets, so you've got your relationships with the programme people. When it's something like the land, I guess it's slightly less familiar territory for you.
It's very different. I mean, yeah, I've got 4,000 numbers in my BlackBerry now. And
where did you get those numbers from? I presume you didn't program each one in individually yourself.
It's working PR for 5 years. You pick up contacts as well. But you're right. It's probably harder to get coverage in the land than it is in Sydney Morning Herald Today Tonight.
So just hypothetically, and this is because genuinely it's a part of the world which is less familiar to me, is say a client comes along and you've got to develop a pitch for Today Tonight. What are you looking for in the story that you know that Today Tonight would be looking for?
Well, it needs to be a news angle. And you need to think, when pitching to Today Tonight, about the grab on the advert before it comes on. So if there's no catch for the ad, there's no story.
You mean a soundbite?
Simple as that. Well, the ad before it comes on. Do it yourself. Save money. Whatever it is.
But do you trust a current affair or Today Tonight to actually deliver what you're asking them for? Do you trust them not to turn your client over?
Absolutely. And I've built up relationships and friendships now with Today Tonight and other avenues. And I do trust them. They trust me, and it's two ways. And my client trusts me as well because of my relationships with the media.
Now, I know I promised you that I'd stop kind of writing about it, but I've got to ask, as you're here, about you had a bit of a falling out with the current affair.
I did, Tim, and everyone makes mistakes. I put my hand up and I apologised in front of 4.2 million viewers across Australia and said, I'm sorry, I made a mistake, but look where it's got me now. It's given me this opportunity to have my own business and a brand new, or very, very new PR model.
And I'm not going to labour on it, but for those who aren't familiar what I'm talking about, basically this was a segment on A Current Affair where in order to get your client talked about, you found some actors who had the right life experience for what they were looking for, which are, they were supposed to be divorced.
You lied, yes. Basically. And sorry, I'm coming from a public relations point where I'm very much a fan, you know, I'm very much ethical, and I'm also an ex-journalist. I was a tabloid journalist in the UK, and you know, coming from the PR perspective, you know, the moment we lie to the press is the moment that, you know, they don't trust us anymore. And then on the flip side, as a journalist, if a PR person did that to me, I'd blackball you in a second. You know, if you actually created actors to run a story with. I think it's absolutely despicable what you did.
Oh, Scott, look, I mean, I don't think I'm on a Current Affairs Christmas card list. Let's not lie.
I was going to say, have you rebuilt the relationship?
No,
with them?
But everyone makes mistakes in their life.
That's a huge one, though. I mean, that's the ultimate rule, and that's one of the rules of PR, is that we've got to be honest and ethical, and the moment we destroy that, you know, it takes away from everything.
Well, that's your opinion, Scott. I've made a mistake. I've said my sorries, and I've learned from that as a person and as a businessman as well.
What's obviously publicity is, you know, as people often do
microcosm of PR.
Yeah, one. Well, it's one aspect. It's I guess a specialism might be one way of saying it. What sort of career route did you take to get you to this point? You know, how did you sort of get into PR in the first place?
I came back from overseas traveling. I worked sports marketing for 3 years. Went overseas traveling, and then thought, I've done sport, what's next? So PR. And always wanted to go into fashion PR, couldn't get into fashion PR straight away, so did tech PR for a while, then went to fashion PR, and then went over to Marks & Sparks.
What agencies did you cut your teeth on?
Text 100 and Edelman.
How long were you each of them?
About 6 months, so just contract work.
Oh, okay.
And then, yeah, got into fashion, which is the area I wanted to get into.
And what did you... I mean, Marks & Sparks is interesting because... It won't be surprised from that. That's Max Markson's company, probably the best known, highest profile publicist in Australia. What sort of what did you learn while you were there?
I learnt more with Max than I've learnt anywhere else in my entire life, and I owe him everything really, because I learnt how to get a story.
Do you count yourself as a mini Max then?
Max and I are different. We're very different people.
And what and how to get a story, as in sort of how to build the picture of what the journalists are looking for in your mind.
And it's how to get a client coverage and understanding they want to get coverage to increase sales. And that's what I learned. It's about getting them coverage. You pick up the phone, you make a phone call, you don't get scared. If they say no, you work out why. And if you can go back to them with a new angle, a news angle, which they like, that's what you do. But it's really understanding how to get a client some coverage.
Now, one of the things I noticed with Max is, you know, I've written some stories which have probably been negative for him in the past. He never seems to take it personally. No matter what, you know, what you say about him, if there's a kind of a publicity angle, he'll kind of bounce back and, you know, he'll be on the phone and sort of cheerful and charming next time. Is that your sort of view of media relations as well, that you can't afford to fall out with them?
You have to be thick-skinned as well in this game. And I'm very thick-skinned as well.
How have you found, because, you know, I remember probably, it must have been 2 weeks ago as we were recording this, I remember I was leaving this podcast, I was in the car chatting to you on the phone, as you were looking on the unfolding comment thread, and you were like, oh, I'm getting a bit hammered here, and that was like your first reaction. How does it feel, though, when it must feel a bit like the whole industry has taken against you?
Tim, I think the thing which I find most offensive is that people keep saying I have a Windsor knot. It's a double Windsor knot. And yes, my hair, not that bad,
one
honestly.
One or two people got personal comment about the style of the tie, which again is, I have to say, by some way, Jyoti is the most presentable person in this room.
Absolutely, yeah.
But certainly he's the only person who's taken the trouble to wear a suit, let alone a tie. So,
But Tim, I'm not worried about the comments. It doesn't worry me, because at the end of the day, I've had 12 new clients in the last 10 days. Tell me another PR company anywhere in Australia who's picked up 12 new clients in the last 10 days.
There's a difference between 12 small clients and 12 medium-sized clients, or one big client that's a $1 million campaign. You know, I think that what you're doing, you know, is just, you're not a PR man, you're a publicist. Let's cut to the chase here. You know,
yeah, sure, that's fine.
Yeah, I wouldn't clash as a PR man.
But Scott, the thing is, with that, I don't have to be the conductor of the orchestra. I can be part of the orchestra and work in with PR firms and advertising firms. And like, even if there is a company out there who has a, in a PR firm who can't get their client coverage, give me a shout and I'll see what I can do.
I know there's a few PR agencies out there that can't get their client coverage, but I also know a whole bunch of other PR agencies that can get you coverage virtually anywhere.
Well, let me put this to you, Scott. If you were working with a particular client,
yep,
and in the end you decided that strategically what they needed was exposure on a consumer affairs show,
yep,
you know, 1.3 million audience or whatever it is,
would I do it?
Yeah,
of course I would.
Okay, but would you also...
But only if it was strategically important.
Agencies have to work with partners.
Yeah.
Would you be willing to call in Jodie as the specialist who's got the relationships with Today Tonight, for instance?
Well, most PR agencies already deal with a current affair on Today Tonight. You know, it's not... Publicists are just that small area that take a client and then focus them, you know, try and sniper shot them into whatever they can. Whereas, you know, PR, we create full communication strategies for clients. That's what we do. And that includes media relations, you know. And a good PR agency has somebody that has connections in a facet of the media, whether it be, you know, newspapers, whether it's online, whether it's on TV. You know, publicists... Every PR person should be a publicist, you know, as part of what they do. But it's just a part of what they do.
Jyoti, that debate, I guess it's generalist who has got all of these specialties under one roof versus specialist.
Yeah, that's fine, though. I am specialising in one area. I'm not promising 12-month strategies. I'm promising hits, which will get my clients coverage. And I believe they want this format.
Broadly, how much do you charge? If I wanted to get Mumbrella on Today Tonight. Actually, yeah, no, let's do this as a hypothetical. If I wanted to get Mumbrella on Today Tonight, how would the conversation go between you and I as client to start off with?
Well, it's sitting down, Tim. I mean, I don't think you can't afford my rates, Tim. But,
well, we were going to come on to the rates in a minute.
It's working out why you want that. And if it's doing, I mean, you don't want to increase sales of Mumbrella.
So it's to reach a certain slice of the audience. So there's a reason for wanting to be on.
Well, it's going to them and saying that you're a specialist in a certain area. And that's the way we can get you on Today Tonight.
So you wouldn't come with a topic and say this person's just done a piece of research or something? Or...
Not with you, no. It wouldn't work. But in terms of pricing, it's different for every single client. Mm-hmm. Because, as I said, someone wants the land, someone wants Today Tonight.
Yeah.
So I sit down with the client and we work through it. And it's all very transparent. And we work out exactly what they want.
And what would you charge for a one hit on Today Tonight? What would you say that the advertising equivalent would be worth of appearing on Today Tonight?
Well, I don't work on that. I work on just a set fee for somewhere between $2,500 to $10,000. It's sometimes a client just wants this and will give me a figure. But other clients, like Proto Partners, a design service company, they want me to get them in financial magazines and will give me a set fee. But if I get them new business, they will give me 25% of all the new business. So the structure is different for every single client.
See, to me, Scott, I know people have used PR agencies. They've signed them up on a retainer.
Yep.
They've been promised a number of things over 3 or 6 months. None of it has happened.
Absolutely.
But they've still paid.
I know.
This model, if I was a client, I would actually be quite attracted to.
Really?
Yes.
And the reason I say really, Tim, is because it's not just about getting media coverage. I mean, you know, you retain a PR agency for a lot more than that. And, you know, I think that when you've not come to the market and said, you've not had to go in and, you know, get a whole bunch of different PR agencies pitching towards you. What Jyoti offers is basically, I'll sit down with you. This is where you want to go. We'll try and work out a way for you to get there.
Yeah, now let's leave the strategy to one side. The bit that it strikes me is where agencies say they can deliver something and then don't, and the client still has to pay them.
You can say the same about advertising. You can say an advertising company says, well,
sure,
we can deliver adverts, and they put them up there, but, you know, does it convert to sales?
But you can see the charm of this model.
I can see the charm if you're a small business without a lot of money and you want to try and get something, and you think that what public relations is being on a current affair or being in a newspaper. But it's not just about that, you know.
But some companies want just that.
Yeah, no, but that's because they're not being educated in what public relations is, you know. And that's the point of what we are as PR people. We're not just there to say, great, that's media relations, I'm a publicist, boom, on you go. That's going to, you know, what that'll do in the long run is take these small companies who, say they become big companies, right, either through yourself or through their own hard work and hard steam, and then they think that that's all public relations is, and down the line, that's going to kick them right in the ass. Sorry, got a bit angry about that.
No, I mean, don't get angry, but look, at the end of the day as well, if someone wants to increase sales, I mean, for example, Anthogenal spent $25,000 with two big PR firms who didn't get them a single bit of coverage. They came to me, I've delivered, and from that I've got about three other products with them also, and they're happy, and they're getting sales, and their company is about sales.
And have they shown you the sales difference from that one day that you got them coverage? Have you got? Can you do that for every one of your clients and say, I've increased sales because I put you on XXX?
I had Anthogenal on Today Tonight again last week, and by 10:30 the following morning, they'd done $7,000 worth of sales.
Here's another question for you. How many times have you failed to get coverage?
Oh, at the moment, I haven't. But at the moment, I have had one segment filmed which wasn't shown. So the client didn't pay. So as simple as that.
And on the other side of this would be, if you've got a client that say you've got a client who says, I want to be on A Current Affair, right? And you then decide that it's not right for them, okay? At what point, say your funds are low, right, and you're running out of money, say they've not got enough clients come in, would you be wanting to sell out to ensure they get onto that show? Would you want to give them bad advice to get them there?
I've learnt my lesson from everything, and if I can't get them there, I'm very honest. I'll say, guys, it's not working. Close that one down.
Are there times where you say to them, guys, it's not a good idea for you to be on this program?
No, because at the moment, it is a good idea, because everyone wants sales to increase of all the products.
Yeah, but that's the, you know, what if The Current Affair says, oh, wow, we're going to turn it into a negative story, and they do it without you knowing? And then your client sees that, and then
goes, that's all about relationships, and I'm going to say that my relationship with Today Tonight is good enough so that they can understand what I want from the story as well. And when I pitch to them, Scott, that's how I portray the story.
And what about crisis communications? Do you help your clients out with that? What if it suddenly goes wrong for them? You know, that's the whole point. You know, that's another aspect of public relations is crisis communications. We're there to help them, you know, during those times of crisis. But, you know, you're just there as a man to try and make them flog stuff. We're there for, PR people are there for the whole gamut of everything. Did I say gamut? God.
I'm not trying to argue with you, Scott. I'm just saying that there's a place for you and for me as well. As I said before, I can be in the orchestra and not the conductor. I can work with you.
How big is the business for you potentially? It sounds like you have picked up quite a few clients. Are you always, do you think, going to be a sort of a one-man operation, or is it the sort of business model that can actually structure up and you can hire somebody in as a number two?
I think I'll have to hire someone in shortly as well, because as I get more and more clients, I need to service them all, and that's the most important part of it, to make sure it keeps going. So once that time comes around, I will get someone else to come and work with me, which is very exciting.
Well, Jody, thank you very much for entering the Lion's Den and joining the debate. You know, so it would have been easier not to do so. So thank you very much indeed.
Thank you for your time. Pleasure. Thanks, Tim. Thanks, guys.
So Fairfax have become the latest publisher to join the iPad app bandwagon, with Sydney Morning Herald Smart Edition.
Not so smart.
Yeah, it didn't go entirely according to plan. So here's where we're at. They had this big launch. They had cover wraps of the business section promoting Smart Edition with a picture of it on an iPad. Press release announcing this new app. I, as I did for the Australian as well, popped onto the iTunes store to see what the users were saying, who were mostly perplexed, saying, hey, it's effectively a PDF reader.
Yeah.
And also a bit confused and outraged that you could only subscribe to it so long as you subscribe to the print edition. So I wrote a kind of somewhat perplexed point of view at that point. A few days later, Fairfax did come back and say, well, look, actually, our real iPad app will come out in September. And this one really is just another way for existing readers to read the paper. So don't see it as a real iPad app. So reading between the lines, probably the most charitable version is that people in the marketing team and the PR team got carried away presenting it as a full app.
Yep.
So clearly there's a marketing issue at the very least. What's your interpretation?
I mean, marketing issue, yes. The fact that they made it look like it was going to be the app, you know, they kind of sold it as if it was going to be outdo the Australian. And then suddenly you get this PDF where you're dropping in and zooming in. The only good thing about it is it doesn't have autoplay adverts. That's the best thing about it. Apart from that, it's, you know, when I got it, I was just like, are you shitting me? I was stunned that, you know, they would do this. And to subscribe, you know, it just seems like one lot of people aren't speaking to another lot of people, and there seems to be some kind of stramash in the middle.
Yeah, one issue with Fairfax is there is a fair amount of division between the print guys and the digital guys, more so than most publishers probably.
Yeah. Well, it's really shown in this case, and I think it's harmed them. I think in the long run, this is going to harm the SMH iPad Real Edition, as we'll call it.
I think that's the thing, is that potentially there's confusion in the market now, yeah, isn't there, when the full all-singing, all-dancing app launches. The other interesting question that comes up, which is a piece I saw, I think, in Ad Age this week, certainly one of the US advertising publications, talk about the relationship between Time and Apple.
Yep.
And they have built various iPad apps on the understanding that they'd be able to control their own subscriptions. They could sell a bundled subscription, yeah, for instance. It looks like Apple has suddenly pulled back from that.
Yeah, I don't know why. I'd be interested to find out what's going on there.
Because, I mean, obviously, you know, the thought is it that just Apple wants to control the means of payment? But for publishers, if they don't get to control their own subscribers, it's a lot less charming prospect.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I'll be intrigued to see what happens with Apple in that one. Apple like to control everything because, well, I think Steve Jobs is a genius, but I also think he's a fascist. You know, he just wants to make sure he controls everything from the top down and there's no mistakes made, and that's what he does, you know. And then you get other companies that work by committee and things seem to collapse all over the place because of it. Like a bit like democracy at the moment. And I think that in the next few years, we'll definitely see this battle between the publishers who thought the iPad was the saviour, you know, maybe making it the demise of them.
Next up, we talk television. So lots to unpick from television this week. We had MasterChef bowing out with an all-time ratings high. Nine's new show, Hot in Cleveland, brought in about 1.3 million. And the ABC's Wednesday night election specials absolutely stormed it. Let's maybe start off with MasterChef, though. How did you spend MasterChef night,
Scott? I'm just going to say to you that you were right and I was wrong.
Yes.
Because last week we talked about the ratings, and I think I pegged about 2.5 to 3, and you were up at the 4 million plus. And I think what the latest figures show that we're 5 million. I think.
Yeah, the peak figure was more than 5.7 million.
Okay. Well, first off, that makes me absolutely terrified for Australia.
Why?
Because it means that bloody nearly 6 million. You know, people.
One in four of the population. Let's assume.
Watch MasterChef. But I didn't watch the political debate, which, you know.
Well, actually, in fairness, though, the political debate got great ratings. If you added up the ratings of 7, 9 and the ABC for the politics debate, if MasterChef hadn't been on, that would have been one of the biggest audiences of the year and one of the stories of the year.
But so, MasterChef was on, so.
Yeah, MasterChef was on the same night, so it got all of the attention.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not sure that the one can be seen as the opposite of the other. Because many people, you know, myself included, watched the one and then flicked over and watched the other.
I will say this, but MasterChef, I don't watch a lot of it. I watched the final and I was quite disgusted with the choice of winner. So I've not watched the whole thing.
Based on your 10-minute knowledge of the programme.
No, let me explain why. So they get asked to make this frosty egg thing that I've never seen before in my
snow
life.
Egg.
Snow egg, thanks. So they asked to make the snow egg. Young bloke, whatever his name is, Callum, makes one, and the judges all kind of agree it's better than the original.
Yeah, it's slightly less sugary than the original.
But better. Yes. One of them said, you know, this is better than the original.
Well, he said, I liked it better, yes.
Yeah, okay. And yet, the other guy makes it pretty identical.
Adam.
But messes up the kind of caramel on the top a little bit. And he gets better ratings. So he gets higher scores for something that wasn't as good. So is it Replica Chef or is it Master Chef?
Yeah, but they only had 1 or 2 points difference. And even if he scored 1 or 2 points below,
tasted better than original scored it exactly the same. Adam and Callum's identical.
In the end, though, Adam did romp home. Wasn't a point or
well,
two.
Well, no, that was... He romped home because he was only 4 points in the lead, but then romped home because he got better scores for the snow egg.
But to go back...
God damn it,
to go back to your original point, this sort of worrying about what it says about Australia, to me, I still quite like the fact that, you know, an aspirational programme which people have to show a talent to win. I like the fact that...
Do you look forward to MasterChef Kids?
Yes, I probably do, actually. I mean, looking at the little teaser, the quality of the work they're doing, it doesn't look like they're going to get a pat on the head for making baked beans.
I think if it encourages a new generation to want to spend time in the kitchen cooked, I think that can only be a positive thing.
It has been a big week for ratings anyway. One of the other big stories was the Wednesday night ratings from the ABC. So a couple of specials there. The Chaser came back with Yes We Canberra. We also had the Gruen transfer became Gruen Nation. Gruen Nation delivered, the ratings came in on Thursday morning, 1.6 million. Best rating show for the ABC in nearly 3 years. It's also the first time in nearly 3 years that the ABC scored position 1, 2 and 3 in the ratings with Spicks and Specks and The Chaser also in the
good
top three. So, again, to me, this is a good sign. It shows there's an appetite for intelligent programs.
Yeah, and Inception's in the cinema at the moment, intelligent blockbuster. It's all good. Hopefully, we're turning a corner.
We're being very positive today, aren't we? Next up, we talk advertising. So Honda Jazz has put out a series of new ads in which there's a kind of experiment done to see how many hipsters you can fit in the car. How many bodybuilders, how many ninjas, how many rappers? You get the picture. Quick clip.
We ask the question, how much hipster can you pack into a Jazz?
So, Scott, do you know any hipsters?
I know of them. I'm aware of them. I just don't talk to them.
I don't know. I think I've seen a few at Digital Citizens meetings.
Look,
I've seen skinny jeans there.
I've seen skinny jeans there as well.
Hey, question, as my fashion guru. On the train this morning, I noticed somebody, a hipster, because he was wearing skinny jeans, was also wearing odd shoes. Is this
no.
a new trend
I've
which
never
I
seen
haven't...
Before.
Is this a new
Are
trend?
You serious?
George, grab a microphone and see if you can work out which thing is. George is our producer. He doesn't speak very often.
But she's very young, very
but,
sweet.
But she's nodding vigorously. Yeah. It's, let me pass you Jodie's. Oh, now you found a microphone. Yes. Odd shoes.
I wouldn't say for guys.
This was a guy. This was a man. Two trainers.
Maybe.
Different colours.
Maybe it depends what he looked like.
Well, obviously, a douchebag.
Well, clearly a douchebag, yes. I could only see him from behind, but my immediate thoughts were hipster douchebag.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't
Look,
say.
Can I just say the adverts? I like the ninja one just solely for the microsecond you see a turtle. And it was quite funny with the Power Windows bit. They just felt a bit irreverent. And I felt because of that, they're trying to be Old Spice. I felt as though the team have went, saw the Old Spice ad a while
in
back.
In fairness, they wouldn't have seen the online version of Old Spice, but they'd have seen the original one.
Yeah, and I think from that, that's what it feels like.
Isn't that a bit like saying, oh, come on, Kandinsky, he saw Picasso, so he was just trying to copy his old sort of, you know, trend towards modernism.
Did you just compare the Old Spice ad to Kandinsky?
Yeah.
Seriously?
Let's stop there, shall we? Because it's horribly pretentious. Also, the fact that I think one actually lived before the other slightly as well. They crossed over a
Look,
bit, but I've probably gotten in the wrong order.
The Honda ads are engaging at times. Stop laughing.
I can't believe I compared an advertising agency doing an ad about a car online to Kandinsky.
Tim Burrows. Hipster douchebag.
That is. The clip we've just played very much reflects that sort of thing. So let's just pretend that I was being ironic. Anyway, we have to move on to the worst holiday ever. Now, if you've ever had a horrible holiday, this may seem familiar.
Welcome, sir. You must be clueless to stay here.
It's me.
I've put you in the broom closet. It's very small.
As long as it's near the beach.
Beach, swamp.
Can we swim there?
If you like leeches.
Great. And our bags?
Already stolen.
Scott, nice ad. Like it?
It's all right. It reminds me of a trip to Brampton Island I had 2 years ago where I told them within 4 hours I was getting the hell out of there. It was the worst place I've ever been in my life.
And was that because you'd poorly researched holiday beforehand?
I researched the place and it looked amazing, everything I'd seen. And then I went there and it was absolutely the worst holiday experience. And they actually flew us off the island after 4 hours.
I suppose the challenge for the travel brand is to deliver on that promise that if you look at their stuff with them, then they will help you avoid
That
sort
of peril. It's an okay ad. That's what it says in the tin, I guess.
Now, just finally,
Foursquare.
So, I think I'm going to quit Foursquare.
On you go. Nobody will notice.
Yeah, but that's sort of the thing about Foursquare. So, Foursquare was going to be the next big social media thing.
Yeah.
You're a champion and a supporter of Foursquare. Yeah. What have I missed? What is it that I don't get?
I used to be a champion, but I think now that. It just feels the problem with it is it's. I compared it, and when we spoke earlier, I compared it to a telecommunications company. You know, they lure you in with all these awesome promises. They go, oh, you're our best customer ever. Then a year down the line, they throw you away, change the plans for new people coming in, offer them the world. And the problem is, if you only go to 50 locations per week, per month, the same places, because, you know, you lead a busy life and you've got a job and you see the same people. What's the point of Foursquare?
You stop getting your new badges, don't you?
You just check in at the same places all the time.
You're the mayor of the place you're regularly the mayor of.
Yeah, and you've got 50 points for going to the same place once each day, and that's it. I mean, what more do they want? You get the whores who run about. That's
a Foursquare.
Do you want to explain what I just said there in English? Sorry. the whores who go out and do the whole check. I mean, I saw something the other day. They've got like 1,000 points on Foursquare, and I thought, how sad is your life that you feel that everywhere you go, from the toilet in your work to bloody up the road to get a bit of bun or something like that, next thing you know, you're checking in. God, I know a guy that's a Foursquare mayor of a brothel next door to his office because he checks in there for a laugh.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it?
Or does he?
but for instance, you know, one of the things that I found slightly weird, for instance, is the mayor of my office at Mumbrella has never set foot within the door but has suddenly just started checking in.
Who is it? Let's find
out. I'm going to write it should be up on the site by the time listeners. I'm going to write a piece on why I'm leaving Foursquare, and I can't remember the person's name, but I might just name check him in the piece.
Yeah, do that.
What
a loser.
Yeah, well, maybe. I mean, I have no idea why, but it feels, at first you think it's a bit weird, you know, suddenly you're in the office late at night and someone's just checked in to say they're in your office.
Oh, man, I hope they're advertising. Please let them be advertising.
Yeah, it's all a bit strange.
I've found it useful on 3 occasions when I've checked in somewhere and somebody's been walking by, looked at the Foursquare, saw I was in there and dropped in to say hello.
Yeah, or you and I had a conversation earlier as I'd say, oh, I see you were at the football last night.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's almost it. Yeah. For me, it's not worth the time and effort. Thank you, Foursquare. I'm out.
And I'm on Twitter anyway, so you can attempt to see that I was at the game anyway.
Yeah. See? Twitter too hard to follow, all those 12,000 people.
Away with you.
That's all we have time for today. Thank you very much to my co-host Scott Rody.
Thanks, Tim.
And to our brave guest Jody Hughes. Thanks also to CBS for use of their studios. Production was by Georgina Pearson. That was the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Tim Burrows. Toodle pip.